Greetings, this is Mark Holmer from Carrier Management, and I'm about to interview Andrew Rear about his COVID-19 experiences. Andrew, first off, tell me a little bit about yourself and where you fit in the insurance industry.
Sure, yes. I've had a 30-year career in the industry, ranging from the primary life market through consulting. I ran Munich Re's life business in UK, Asia Pacific, and Africa. And then for the last 4 years, I was CEO of Munich Re's Digital Partners business, which is their insurtech investment and partnership business. I left that in December. I'm now chairman of Buckle, which is one of the US full stack insurtech startups, and I'm doing various other board and advisory roles.
Okay, excellent. The other thing I wanted to too is set the stage, because I know we're going to talk about your COVID experiences, and age supposedly makes a difference here. How old are you?
I'm 50. I was 50 last September.
Okay, and you're married. You have a couple kids, right?
Yes, I've got one son who's working and a daughter at university.
Okay. Now, tell me if you could bring viewers and listeners back to the day where you first started to feel something wasn't quite right.
Sure. So for me, my story starts the December the 20th was the date I got the symptoms. My wife works in a school, and before Christmas, the virus was absolutely rampant in the schools in London. So it was almost an inevitability that she got it. So she got ill on the 18th of December. And then, you know, you get this sort of choice. Are we going to kind of lock her in the back bedroom all the way through Christmas? Or do we just accept that, you know, we live in a fairly, you know, modest sized house here. We're all kind of on top of each other, so we're just going to get it. And I thought, you know, like, how bad can it be?
So we didn't quarantine each other then.
And I just figured that I would get it. And sure enough, you know, 2 days after she got it, I caught it.
What were some of the early symptoms?
If you sort of Google a symptoms list, you can basically read down and I've had all of them kind of in order. Initially it was just really like a bit of flu. Not, you know, I would say, you know, real flu as opposed to man flu. You know, I was running a serious temperature. You know, at one point it was,
how high was your temperature at its worst?
The worst point, it was about 101, I think, which is probably the highest temperature I've ever had. But, you know, I mean, I felt terrible, but I felt like I got flu. Like, it was not unusual in that sense, you know. So, and I'd got the stuff that goes along with a fever. So, you know, the joint, the muscle pain, the, you know, feeling exhausted. I got the COVID dry cough almost straight away, but honestly, that didn't bother me, you know. And sort of through up until the kind of couple of days before Christmas, you know, I just felt crappy, if you know what I mean, but not, sure, not so bad, right?
Sure.
The next thing that happened is I got really dehydrated, and this is one of the things that, like, nobody tells you this stuff when you've got COVID. COVID does specific things to the water in your body. It diverts it from your kidneys to other places, like your lungs and your bowels. And so you're supposed to drink 3 liters of water a day. I mean, I don't know how much I was drinking, but I was drinking, I felt a lot. And, like, I mean, I didn't urinate for days. And when I did, it was brown like gravy. It was like you know the morning after your worst drinking session, right? It was and then after that came the headaches, which just got worse. So I was taking paracetamol and ibuprofen. I was taking the absolute maximum you're allowed to take. And you know, that I would get like half an hour relief from my headache. And then, you know, I'd have 3.5 hours to wait until I could take tablets again with my headache getting progressively worse.
Pause for a second. So this is happening and you're at home and you're sick and your wife is also sick. So how did you function? How did you eat? How did you take care of yourself at that point?
So thankfully, so I had my son and my daughter in the house as well. My son was, you know, sick for a couple of days and then he recovered. My daughter had it before, so she didn't catch it again. So she was looking after us, doing a lot of the cooking. My wife was, she was pretty sick, but sort of not quite like me. So she was able to drag herself around and function. So, you know, between us, we managed to put together a sort of Christmas dinner and, you know, we tried to be normal. But honestly, most of that time, I was just sat on the sofa staring into space. I found that I couldn't even watch the TV. I was just better off just sort of staring out of the window like a kind of zombie.
Oh man! Now, one of the reasons we wanted to talk to you about your account is we noticed your tweets about what you were going through, and so what I want to give people a sense of is, how long were you at home like this and what brought you to the hospital at some point?
So December 20th was the start date for me. So I guess that's what it's probably a you know, 2 weeks, a little bit more, until things started to get better. Which was for me, like maybe January the 3rd, which was like Sunday last week. So by then, my fever had gone, the headaches had stopped. I was still really dehydrated and exhausted, but I thought, you know, this is just the after effects of the illness. One of the things that goes on during COVID, if you have it, you know, a bad bout like me, you're sort of breathless all mm-hmm. of the time.
Sure.
You know, it's hard to climb the stairs and stuff. And I was still breathless, but I was not getting worse. I felt like I was getting better. And the other symptoms had more or less disappeared. And then I went through Monday and Tuesday last week, getting a little bit better each day. Tuesday, I managed to do a couple of hours work, and then I sort of felt exhausted, so I stopped. Wednesday, I got up and I thought, my first thought was, you know, I'm not worse, but I'm definitely not better. I've stopped getting better, and I was sort of expecting, you know, my recovery to accelerate. I'd seen what happened to Jeanette, my wife, that once she got sort of over the disease, she recovered her strength really quite quickly, and I was not doing.
Really?
And then Wednesday night, I realized I was really breathless. Like, you know, I could only catch, if I was sitting down and doing literally nothing, I was fine. If I was doing anything at all, or trying to stand up, then I started to feel breathless. And I Ooh. Thought, that's, you know, that's not good. So I decided that on Thursday, I would just sort of stay in bed, give myself a chance to recover. Turns out that's a bad idea, because if you lie on your back in bed, you make your lungs work harder, not easier. You're actually better sitting up. So by the time I got to Thursday night, I was in a complete mess. Really, just breathing though. That was the only thing. I felt fine apart from that.
But just breathing—that's a big just.
Well, right, and you don't sort of. I didn't realize how anxious it was making me, and how then I was not helping myself. You know, I was breathing faster and faster, shallower and shallower. And it came to a head when Jeanette came in from work about 6 PM. I was still in my bed. I'd been in bed most of the day, but I got up and I went downstairs. And I went downstairs, you know, just to say, you know, hello, how was your day? And I couldn't even get the words out. And I just sort of sat on the kitchen floor, and I had to be helped to the sofa. So at that point, we called the doctor. You know, realizing things were maybe not all right. They sent an ambulance, and so by the early hours of Friday morning, I found myself in hospital. It turned out actually that it's quite a what I had was quite a common sort of side effect for people who've had a bad experience with COVID. When you run down, you catch a common or garden chest infection.
Did you? How bad was it? Pneumonia, or was it something?
So they never really diagnosed it as pneumonia, but it was something along that. I got a, well, they described it as a really nasty one. You have this, I've been learning all my medical terminology. You have this blood marker called CRP, which is normally between 3 and 10. It's a measure basically of a protein to measure how, you know, whether you've got some kind of infection in your body, and mine was at almost 300, which is like sky high.
Wow.
So I've got something nasty, but essentially what they said to me was that you're a youngish and healthy guy, you know, I've never had any real illnesses. So you got the sort of chest infection that would have made you feel, you know, rough for a few days. You might have gone to get some antibiotics from the doctor. You might not have done, you know, I might have, you know, knowing me, I'd have probably never quite got around to it, and I'd have, you know, got over it after a day or two in my bed. But because it was attacking my lungs, which had got really quite a lot of COVID damage, it left me needing oxygen. The good thing was the hospital I was in, is one of the ones the UK has designated as a sort of COVID specialist center.
Okay.
They had seen my precise condition like 1,000 times before. So they were on top of it from day one.
Is this I've seen it described as the appearance of glass in the lungs. Was that a version of what you had?
Yes, I think so. Yes.
Okay.
The way they described it to me, actually, they said there's another, there's another thing they look for, another blood marker called D-dimer. And a raised D-dimer normally means you've got a blood clot. So, you know, they use it to diagnose strokes.
Sure.
And what they're seeing with COVID is you get the same reaction. So they sent me off for a CT scan to look at my lungs and see whether I actually, you know, did have an actual blood clot, or whether I just had COVID. And they said, you know, came back and said, you're basically, your lungs are working at half capacity because of COVID. So now you have this chest infection, which is reducing their capacity further.
But no blood clot.
Enough oxygen in.
No blood clot, is that correct?
But no blood clot, no.
I'm very glad for you, Jesus.
Absolutely, yes. You know, that would have just been one more thing.
Sure.
And then the fact that I was dehydrated and had been unable to rehydrate myself, that makes your blood thicker, which means it moves more slowly, so then I'm not transporting oxygen around my body. So the first thing they did was they stuck me on oxygen, which sort of helps you already starts to help, you know. And when you're on oxygen, for me, that really calmed me down, because then I'm thinking, well, I'm definitely getting oxygen in my body because I've got a mask on, and I can feel the coldness of the air going into my lungs, and then you calm down, and that enables you to, you know, to breathe a bit. And they gave me then a load of fluids. You know, initially they were just mainlining them in, and then after a bit they put me on a drip once they got me stable. And then they gave me some steroids to help the oxygen, which I think helps the oxygen, your blood absorb the oxygen. And then they gave me horse-sized quantities of antibiotics to sort the thing out. You know, they put a little cannula in your arm, and then they were coming along with
syringes which were like this big.
Oh my gosh.
Shoving antibiotics in. I was like, whatever, I don't care.
No, I want to pause for a minute to talk. You were in the hospital then from Thursday night until, when did you come home?
Until Saturday night.
Saturday, okay. Yeah. So you, I take it you were in a COVID ward.
Yes.
So what was, have you ever been in the hospital before this?
I've been in the hospital once before, yeah.
So what was this like in and of itself and compared to a more traditional hospital visit?
I mean, it, in a way, much the same. I was not in in ICU, sort of intensive care where it's really crazy. It was, but there were two things I think that were notable. One, of course, is everybody is wearing PPE, the protective equipment. Mm-hmm. And I honestly struggle to understand how, in particular, the nurses and the nursing auxiliaries, you know, the people who come and change your bed linen and that kind of stuff, how sure. they cope, because it's hot, right? Hospitals are warm and they're wearing not just the face masks that you and I wear, but they're wearing these, I think they're called N95 masks, these sort of special air filter ones. Occasionally around some patients, I suppose, who are particularly at risk, they're wearing ones that look more like gas masks. And they've got visors on and hats on. And so, you know, just think they must be absolutely boiling. The other thing that was different from when I was in hospital before is when I was in hospital before, there was very definitely a sort of day and night rhythm. You know, you got treated during the day and in the night you slept, and they might pop in a couple of times during the night to take observations or something. There was none of that where I was. They were flat out working the entire night.
Wow.
I was in a little I was in a ward of 33, which was completely full. The nursing staff, they were nearly 40% down on capacity because nurses have been getting sick.
Yeah.
Of the three of us, the guy in the bed to my left was really quite poorly. So they were, the nurse was looking after me almost any time that she wasn't dealing with me or the other two guys in my ward. She was just with him the whole night. She worked a 12-hour shift, and I am 99% certain she didn't even get a 5-minute break in a 12-hour shift. I just thought she was astonishing and boiling hot. She was complaining to me one time. She was over to do to change my drip or something, and she was complaining that she was boiling hot under a under a mask. But you know, relentlessly cheerful and professional. They're doing an unbelievable, particular. I mean, the doctors as well, but particularly the nurses. They're doing just an incredible job.
I'm glad to hear that. We haven't often had a chance to talk to people who've gone through what you've gone through. So I think that's a very interesting to hear. And it must have been pretty profound for you to be right in the thick of things.
It was. I mean, that was sort of why I wanted to write about it on Twitter, because at least here in the UK, there's so much misinformation being mm-hmm. put out by people, you know, who've got a political agenda.
You too.
And most of these people are completely ignorant of what it's actually like, you know. So, and I came away with those sort of two impressions. Firstly, that the NHS staff the medical staff are working just unbelievably hard, and yet still providing, like, you know, really proper care. So, like, when my consultant came in to see me the next morning came and see me on Saturday morning, saying she thought I was doing well, and they were hoping they'd that they would be able to let me go. You know, she stood by my bed for 10 minutes while I sort of got my head around the questions that I was trying to ask. You know, when you're in that situation, you don't think very fast. And she was just incredibly patient. And I'm thinking, you know, I have absolutely no idea how many patients she had, but, you know, I'm sure she was responsible for more than just one ward. So she probably had a couple of hundred people that she was dealing with, most of whom at that point, who were far sicker than me. And yet, you know, at no point was she sort of itching and looking at her watch. And the other impression that I thought was important to get across was they really are now getting on top of how to treat the disease and the after effects, and I think you know, if it, everybody needs to be needs to take care and recognize that you know, anybody can get this. Anybody can end up in a bad situation in hospital. And, you know, the one sort of thing I'm kind of thankful for is that, you know, I got the disease, you know, I would say through bad luck, because, you know, my wife's an essential worker, so she has to be out of the house. Other than that, you know, we've been very careful. And, you know, I'd have been embarrassed if I'd got it, because, you know, I'd been down the pub with my mates and, you know, and not wearing a mask, because, you know, every minute they spent looking after me is a minute they spent not spending looking after somebody else. Like, you know, the guy in the Paul in the bed next to me, who was really, really sick.
Sure.
You know, so I think it's important on all of us not to put more pressure on the system than we need to, just by, you know, taking basic precautions to, you know, to look after each other.
Sure, sure. Now, I'm remiss. This should have been my first question. And I want to know how you're feeling now. What's your status?
I'm getting better every day.
Okay. Good.
The antibiotics are clearly working. I'm still breathless. I'm fine when I'm sitting here, you know, and I've been talking to you for whatever it is, you know, 20 minutes without feeling breathless. Sometimes if I'm on the phone to somebody, I have to sort of stop and take a minute to catch my breath. And I'm learning to just take a break between doing everything.
Sure, sure.
So, you know, I have a shower, and then before I dry myself, I just sit down for a minute, because showering's hard. The other thing is I've developed an addiction to hospital tea. I basically lived on hospital tea when I'm in there. So I'm sitting going drinking 10 cups of tea a day, which actually is quite nice.
You seem to have a very positive outlook. The fact that you could zero in on a good thing from your experience, the tea, that says a lot.
I tell you one thing. When the ambulance arrived and the paramedic was checking me over, I don't really remember that period. By that point, I was so out of it. But my wife said she'd never seen me really frightened, you know, in the 27 years we've been married. But she said I just looked frightened, like a, you know, like a small boy. And in some ways, that's the difference between then and now. Even you know, when I came back from hospital the next day, you know, I still was by no means well, and I was sort of, you know, shuffling around and, you know, trying to avoid getting up off the sofa very much. But I didn't feel frightened and anxious. I didn't have that, you know, what is this thing that's going on here, and why am I not getting better anymore? Because the they told me what was going on, and they told me I'm on the mend. So, you know, that makes you just much more positive.
But even with all of that, you found that you liked hospital tea. I mean, I just...
Yeah. It's great.
But people, when there's serious illness, that can be a traumatic experience for most people who go through that. So I'm wondering, do you have a sense of that for your own experience? And if so, do you see it changing you?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose that's too soon to say, too soon to say, Mark. It's a good question. I mean, at the moment, not, you know, at the moment I'm just sort of thankful to be still here. Thankful for the medical staff who sorted me out. And you know, at every stage, I was absolutely determined that I was not going to hospital. You know, I'd heard, you see the stories on the news, all these, you know, incredibly ill people, you know, on ventilators and things. And I'm thinking, I'm not that sick. And I, you know, why, I don't really want to use resources that someone else can use and so on, you know? So when the doctor said he would send an ambulance, I was like, well, is that really necessary? We need someone to check you over. And then the paramedic at the ambulance says, or when you take you to hospital, you know, do we really need to? Yes, you really do need to go. And then you go to hospital, you go to the emergency department, and the doctor checks you over. And the emergency department says, yeah, we need to get you up to a ward. We're going to keep you in for a couple of days at least. And it's like, really? You know, am I really that sick? So at the moment, I think I'm just sort of thankful that, you know, that they knew what, that they knew what was what the problem was, and that they found a solution. If there's some, you know, more profound or traumatic thing, who knows, maybe that comes later.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm gonna make an attempt to connect to the industry that I cover and that you're in. First off, I'm wondering, are you aware of many of your peers who've gone through something similar at this point?
I mean, I know a lot of my peers have had the virus. Mm-hmm. Mostly, they've had a much better experience than me. But one of my good friends and one of the best underwriters in the UK group life market, Tim Creamer, again, who was a young guy. I think he was an asthmatic, but he had no other, you know, real like health conditions. Yeah. He died of it in the first wave, you know, which is horrifying. And that, you know, he left a young family behind, and you know, that's just horrifying. Seeing people die, you know, 50 years before their time is is brutal.
What would you tell people in the insurance industry who haven't gone through this?
I would say, yeah, be thankful and be careful. Don't assume that just because you're young and fit, that, you know, you either can't get this or it's, you know, not going to be really bad when you do get it. There's absolutely, and my doctor said this to me, you know, there's absolutely nothing in my medical history which would indicate that I would be in any way, you know, susceptible to having a bad time. You know, he said to me, you're the sort of person that I would have expected to have had, you know, a couple of rough days, and then bounce back with some paracetamol, as opposed to, you know, what I ended up with.
And I'm trying to track the days. It's basically, you've had this now for about a month and counting.
Yeah, a bit less. Yeah, sort of 3 weeks. I I guess. Well, maybe okay. Nearly 4 weeks from December 20th, anyway.
Almost a month.
Almost a month. Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty significant. I'm wondering too, if there's a way. I'm trying to think of a way to articulate this. Can the property casualty insurance industry learn from this? And if so, what would that be?
I don't know. I mean, apart from, I suppose, I guess maybe there's two things. One is that as the virus recedes and we start opening up again, then if I were running a large PNC carrier, particularly with a large operations department, large claims department, I'd be very nervous about having a lot of people together in a all in an office packed in closely. If you get a variant, what's happened in London is we got this new variant which was transmitting much faster. If you get one of those in your office in Wilmington, you could find that all of a sudden 3/4 of your staff have got the disease before you even noticed. Some of them are going to be badly affected, some are not going to be badly affected, but your operations are going to be a mess. So I think the industry really needs to get on top of remote working and working from home as a long-term thing. We need to understand that having people in an office is a big deal. And I suppose the other thing is you need to make sure you have your sort of business continuity, your key man continuity policies in place. One thing I felt thankful for was that I'd left Digital Partners. I'd actually handed over the business on the 1st of December. So the one thing I wasn't doing in hospital was checking work emails, which I know I would have been doing if I was still running the company. You can't not work, it was a real load off my mind knowing that I wasn't letting my colleagues down by just laying in my bed.
Well, you also need to focus on yourself and getting well.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's hard these days. If you're in any kind of critical position, you always feel like somebody else, like there's nobody that can take over from you. And again, if I were running a large insurer now, I would be thinking about, do I want to explicitly put in place sort of deputizing operations so that if my chief underwriting officer gets sick, I can kind of turn off his emails and my deputy chief underwriting officer automatically assumes the responsibility.
Understood.
That's not how we work today. The deputy chief underwriting officer might step up, but he does it in a sort of slightly informal way. And then they talk on the phone and that kind of thing. I think what we've shown with this pandemic is that, you can be pretty young and pretty healthy and all of a sudden flat on your back and incapable of doing anything. I think PNC carriers, like all companies, need to make sure that they can handle that kind of thing.
That's a pretty... I suspect that idea is going to be explored for many months to come, considering the sheer volume of all of this. It's just so profound that people are only now beginning to grasp.
I think that's right, yeah.
Give me any final thoughts about what you went through and where you are now.
Mark, I'm just thankful to be... to be, you know, still here and on the mend. You know, I've got a pretty long road towards complete recovery. You know, my doctor says I should expect 4 months, but you know, the reality is, you know, I'd already given up my ambition of becoming, you know, England football captain. So, you know, if I'm a little bit more breathless and feel a little bit older than I did a few months ago, you know, at least I'm still here. What I would say to your viewers is, you know, believe me, you can get this. You don't have to be 80 or have a bunch of health conditions. You know, you can be young and fit and get a really nasty dose of this, and you really don't want to take that risk, because it's really very unpleasant. So, you know, wear a mask, wash your hands, keep away from people, you know, and just try and stay careful.
I think those are wise words, and thank you so much for your time and for talking with me. I really appreciate it, and I hope you keep being on the mend.
But, no, at all. Thank you, Mark.
What a way to both end the year and start the year at the same time.
Absolutely, yes.
But all the best to you, and until next time.
Thanks very much, Mark.